The time I really realized, oh, now it could actually happen, was when I was running down the finish chute, took a turn and said, okay, no one is coming. Then the last 200 meters, I felt that I could do it, but you never know because, yeah, it's Ironman, it's a beast, and it's over after the finish line. And when I saw the finish line, I knew, okay.
That was the 2019 Ironman World Champion, Anne Haug. And this is her story on the Pacing Racing Podcast. All right, everyone, what's up? Welcome back and welcome to the first time listeners. My name is Stephen Langenhausen and I'm the host of the Pacing Racing Podcast. We have a really exciting episode here on the Challenge Roth Road to Roth Series podcast, which includes a great interview with the 2019 Ironman World Champion, Anne Haug. So for the first time listeners, a bit of a backstory here with the Road to Roth Series. At the beginning of August, I announced I'll be doing my first full distance triathlon at Challenge Roth in 2020. And since then, I found that a lot of listeners were actually on a similar path, whether it was for Roth or another race, but they too were on their crazy journey to their first full distance triathlon and looking forward to hearing content specific to the full distance. Of course, never having actually done this distance before, I figured that everyone could benefit the most in a series where I interview top pro triathletes and coaches that will be able to provide a ton of training tips specific to the full distance, as well as give us that motivation and insight we need to help maximize our performances come race day. Motivation and inspiration seems endless in this interview with Anne as she walks us through how she first got into her triathlon journey, which ultimately led her into becoming the Ironman World Champion in 2019 with an incredible time of 8 hours and 40 minutes, making her the third fastest female in history. Anne also talks to us about what's ahead for her this season as she prepares for Challenge Roth 2020. A theme we also explore in today's conversation is the recent announcement of the Professional Triathletes Organization and how Anne as a professional athlete is impacted by this and what this means for the sport going further. We end off this episode with lots of training tips for age groupers training for their first long distance triathlon, so I hope you leave with insight on how the best in the world train, think, and prepare for races like Challenge Roth and Kona. So now sit back, take notes, and enjoy the show. The sponsor of today's podcast is brought to you by Quintana Roo Triathlon Bikes. I'm absolutely ecstatic and humbled to be working alongside Quintana Roo as they have the best lineup of triathlon bikes and products out there on the market. And to be riding a Quintana Roo bike is honestly a dream come true. Now, Quintana Roo actually started making triathlon bikes all the way back in 1989 and have since created the nicest looking designs and the most top performing features I've seen. And after a ton of research, I went with the PR5, seeing as I'll be doing my first full distance triathlon at Challenge Roth this summer. So I want to make sure I was equipped with the best bike and the best gear. And I can't wait to show this bike off. So currently right now, I'm working alongside JP at Brown Sports on a bike fit video, which is going to be awesome because for those who don't know about that shop, they sell and do bike fits on QR bikes all the time. So you can stay tuned for that by simply subscribing to the Pace Racing YouTube channel. And another reason I went with Quintana Roo bikes were that when you ride with QR, you essentially become family. Now, at any Ironman or USA Triathlon event that QR is attending, you can bring your QR bike to the booth and they'll do a free checkup and tune-up, which is super, super cool because it takes the worry out of your racing and traveling. The bike also comes with lifetime warranties, so when you look at the 2019 Kona bike list, you can see why they had over 120 Quintana Roo bikes there. They're absolutely a great brand to ride with, and the bikes are well-suited for challenging courses like Kona. And another neat fact, when you order from Quintana Roo, all the bikes are pulled, painted, and built for each customer order that comes through the door, so much so that they fall within the NAFTA guidelines, and Canadian customers don't actually get hit with any duty on any QR products when they're shipped to Canada. So I think that's pretty neat if you're living here in Canada. I mean, as you can hear, of course, I'm a big fan of not only their bikes, but also their brand and service in general. So stay tuned because you'll be seeing lots of the PR5 across social media. So be sure to be subscribed to all platforms. And again, if you want to learn more about Quintana Roo, then of course, you can simply find them by searching them on Facebook or Instagram by searching Quintana Roo or head to www.quintanarootri.com. And again, Quintana Roo is spelt Quintanarroo. The second sponsor of today's show is 51 Speed Shop, and this is a company that is making huge headway in the triathlon industry. The key difference between 51 Speed Shop and their competitors is that they don't just take the fit first approach in their development. They are the fitters and are actually very well known for being some of the best fitters out there. And I truly think their products they design could be some of the best products out there when it comes to a blend of aerodynamics, comfort, and performance. So between 80 to 90% of the overall resistance affecting the rider comes from aerodynamic drag. Therefore, if we can reduce the drag, the rider can maintain a higher velocity for the same given efforts. And when we buy a triathlon bike, we're actually buying speed. Now, the tri-bike allows a rider to hold a position on the bike and attempt to decrease aerodynamic drag. However, that number one thing that impacts a rider's ability to increase their speed is not aerodynamics. In fact, it's comfort. Now, comfort is measured as our ability to sustain your position for the duration of your race. And if you're unable to hold your position because you're uncomfortable, then nothing else really matters. And that's why 51 Speed Shop has created a variety of aero bar extensions to meet the demands of all types of riders. For example, if you like your wrist in neutral positions with higher hand height when holding the bars, then you can look at the Ski Carbon Extensions, which is used by riders like Jake Birtwistle, Sam Appleton, and Jake Montgomery. Now, if you like neutral wrist with moderate hand height, then you can go with the FSM extensions like Heather Jackson or Tim Reed. Now, you also have the option of the Ultimate Carbon Extensions that offer high hand position while offering multiple rotational configurations, or you can even pair any of these extensions with the 51 Monorizer aero bar system for maximal aerodynamics and comfort. I'm personally a big fan of this brand and their extensions. I'll definitely be throwing a pair on my PR5. Now, which ones? You'll have to stay tuned to find out which ones we'll be putting on through our Bike Fit video. Now, to find out more about 51 Speed Shop, you can actually check them out on Instagram or Facebook by searching 51 Speed Shop, or you can simply check out all their products by going to their website at 51-speedshop.com. All right, so Anne, thanks for coming on. How are things going?
Thank you. Thank you. Very good. I'm in Club La Santa at the moment in my first training camp of the year, so I'm very happy.
Amazing. And I'm sure you've been soaking up the sun and obviously getting a nice mix of quality training and some relaxing at Club La Santa, right?
Yeah, I mean, I hope too, but I got a bit of a food poisoning and the last week I was struggling a bit. So I'm hoping that it's gone in a few days and I can put some more good training into before I'm heading back to Germany. So I'm praying and hoping for the best.
That's right. Hoping for the best, because yeah, you want to get some quality training in while you're down there for sure, right? Now, so as we mentioned, before we dive into all things triathlon, let's talk about your pre-triathlon journey a little bit. I guess, how did you ultimately get into triathlon?
When I was young, my dad was a sports teacher and he wants me to do every kind of sports. So I started with tennis and I played volleyball, soccer, and modern pentathlon, pretty much every kind of sport. And I always knew that I was good in running, or it always comes easier to me. I never was in an athletics club or something. But when I was 20, I had the idea I wanted to do triathlon, but I couldn't swim. So I went to the pool and swam as long as I can to be able to swim 1,500 in a row. And then I started my first triathlon. So it was, yeah, by accident.
Wow, that's amazing, right? And so I can't imagine. It's funny to hear that the Ironman world champion now is saying that, you know, there's a time where she was struggling to swim the 1500 meters. So that's amazing to hear, right? So like at the start of your triathlon journey, of course, I guess you started out in the ITU, right?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. I mean, I started as a hobby athlete in my age group 20 to 25. So, and then I slowly getting via German Bundesliga in European Cups and World Cups. But my goal was always to race in the WTS series. Yeah.
So is that where you linked up with Dan Lorang, your coach right now?
Yes, exactly. I met him in university. We studied together in Munich. Yeah, he wanted to be a coach and I wanted to be an athlete. And he said, come on, I coach you. Let's try how far we can get. And yeah, the rest is history.
Yeah, that's amazing, right? And so, of course, so Dan was a previous podcast guest, and I can listen to him talk about triathlon and coaching all day long. So he's a really knowledgeable guy, and I just couldn't believe when he mentioned that you and him have been working together for so long. Of course, over the years, it's just absolutely incredible, right? And so just talk about your ITU career, per se, when you became professional and you started competing in the WTS series, and walk us through that. I mean, how did you feel with the WTS, and how did you enjoy short course leading into Olympic Games?
Yeah, I mean, the dream of every sportsman is being part of the Olympic Games one time. And that was my biggest goal as well, but it was literally so far away. And yeah, because I teach myself swimming when I was 20, it was always the discipline I really struggled. And yeah, that was always a problem in short course, because I always missed the pack and I was always cycling on my own. And finally, I got a bit closer and I was lucky enough that the bike courses at that time were very hilly and very like challenging. So I could cycle myself in the first pack. And once I'm in the first pack, I could put out a quite good run. So I was lucky enough to qualify twice for the Olympic Games. And that was, what a great, great experience. And Olympic distance and short course is always fast and furious and racing against the competitors. And I still do love it. But I mean, my time is over and now I was looking for a new challenge. So it was a really, really nice part of my career.
For sure, right? Yeah. So you competed in both the 2012 and 2016 Olympics. And you did really well in the ITU, but I mean, I'm glad you made that jump to long distance and competing in Ironman and long distance races, because look how far you've come now. I think that's pretty crazy and a really awesome journey to follow along with. Now, looking at your ITU career here, before we jump into long distance, was there a big race or a moment that stands out to you the most, that was, say, the most memorable or your biggest career-changing moment?
I think there was a few. I mean, emotionally, it was definitely winning WTS Hamburg in 2013, because winning in front of a home crowd is just something so incredible and amazing. And the day after, we got world champion with our team relay. So it was the weekend of my life, pretty much. But I mean, the biggest career highlights were obviously the Olympic Games. Also, I never could make my dream come true and get a medal there. But I mean, participating at the Olympic Games is such a big thing for every athlete. So that's definitely highlights. And but there was another two, like winning the grand final and getting my first silver medal at the ITU World Championships was a career highlight as well. So there was so many and it's really hard to pick one. But emotionally, it was definitely the WTS in Hamburg.
Amazing. No, that's really cool, right? And it's funny, I've actually been doing some interviews with some ITU athletes now who are getting ready for the Olympics and, you know, trying to qualify and going through all the process, and some really top quality athletes, and they're still struggling to get some qualifications to get into the Olympics. So it's definitely, for ITU athletes, it's a really hard battle to actually get into the Olympics. So just to compete there, I'm sure it's just an amazing highlight in your career as well. So it's amazing to hear you went there twice to represent Germany.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, for a country who has like strong competitors, the hardest hurdle to take is to qualify for the Olympic Games, because you have to be so super fit to just make the qualification that I don't want to say the Olympics are then a walk in the park, but it's harder to qualify than actually be on the start line.
That's right. No, it's very true. So, I mean, now we look into 2017. That's, I guess, around the time where you moved to the long distance course and long distance triathlon in general. And what made you originally want to make that jump?
I mean, I was really, really frustrated after the Rio Games, because, I mean, I was like a candidate for a medal, and then I had a really, really tough day in the office in Rio, and I just find out that the swim is just getting faster and faster with all the American girls coming in, and I didn't see a chance to like stand up to my own expectations anymore. So when I was on the start line, I expected for myself to be on the podium, and I knew it's not going to be happening anymore, because the swim is just too fast. And then I make a decision, then it's time to move on. Because I mean, without the Olympics, I've won already like three ITU medals, and I won World Cups and ITU races, and I was looking for something new. And I want to start something new. And then I decided to go to 70.3 and finally to Ironman.
Excellent. So like, what was the transition like from going from short course to the longer course? Was it easy, or were you with Dan Loring at the time?
Yeah, I was with Dan Loring all the time. And the most difficult part was actually the bike, because I mean, riding a TD bike was pretty different to going on a road bike, because the position was just so different. And also to push hard over such a long time is something you don't normally do in ITU racing. It's fast and furious for a few seconds and then you can hide in a pack a bit. So that was definitely a big challenge for me. But the swim and the run on the 70.3 was pretty much the same like ITU, I would say, because, I mean, even when you do short course, you have a pretty high training volume. So there isn't so much difference between ITU and 70.3. The biggest difference is when going to Ironman, that's completely different because it's just you need like a different tank. I always say in ITU, energy, you always have enough energy. So energy is not the restricting part, but in Ironman, you really have to be efficient and you have to train completely different. So that was a big, big step.
Yeah. And I'm always curious, and maybe you can answer a question on this. Like, for athletes jumping from the short course and then, you know, inevitably be doing their first Ironman, like, what was that like for you? How did you find your pacing at the beginning? Because you would probably be used to doing high-paced efforts in a race. And so how did you get through the mindset of really slowing things down and finding out what pace was ideal for you to get through an Ironman?
Yeah, I haven't found the right pace. That was a problem because I was completely dying after 10K on the marathon. I was so dying, I couldn't even count how much Ks I have to run after 10 kilometers. So I was completely lost. But I mean, that was a try and error thing because as I told Dan, I hate to run on my watch or I don't want to watch a power meter or whatever. I just want to go by feeling. And I raced Ironman Frankfurt and yeah, I had a really, really bad start. So after the swim, I had immediately a flat tire. So I was completely lost and had put a new tire on and then I lost so much time that I said, okay, fuck off. I'm just riding and go as hard as I can. Yeah. And I really had to suffer and learn my lesson. So yeah, I did it better in Hawaii then.
Yeah, no, absolutely right. So, I mean, like fast forwarding here, I guess, to 2019, I think it's safe to say, you know, that move from ITU going up to 70.3 and inevitably doing the full distance triathlon Ironman, it's safe to say you're quite happy with that move now, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's just like a different kind of sport, but I would never like miss the other one because I really loved short course and now I love long course, but there's always two hearts beating in my chest. So, I mean, if I would be fast enough on the swim, I maybe would stick with ITU. But yeah, that's a challenge as well, Ironman.
Exactly. No, that's good stuff. And so let's talk about the 2019 Kona here. So after a third in Kona back in 2018, did you and Dan plan the season with the main focus being another Kona podium performance, or how did it work going from third place in 2018 to looking at your 2019 season?
You can't race for a position because, I mean, you can't influence how good the others are. So I thought, it was my second Ironman. I thought there's a lot of more potential. I wasn't happy with that race because I was just very conservative on the bike. I didn't want to risk anything because I had such a bad traumatic experience in Ironman Frankfurt that I wanted to be as safe as possible and run the marathon without stopping and dying. So that was my goal in my first Ironman in Hawaii. So I definitely wanted the year after a race where I really raced and where can be a little bit more active on the bike and not just hiding in the pack and waiting. So yeah, that was our goal for this year. But I mean, then I was injured the whole year and I had to cancel all my races. And yeah, it was a big struggle, to be honest.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely amazing to see you went from third place in 2018 in Kona. And then, yeah, you struggled through some injuries multiple times over the course of 2019 and to walk away with the first place in Ironman 2019 Kona was absolutely incredible. So let's walk through that race now. Like, what was your mindset going into that race that morning?
I mean, you're always nervous, you know, but because of the history, meaning I wasn't able to run half a year, I was pretty relaxed because I thought, okay, that's what it is. I don't have all my weapons on board, but I have to fight the best fight I have in me. And I mean, it's Ironman. That means 50% is in your mind and 50% is in your body. So if my body's maybe not 100%, maybe I can squeeze out a bit more of my mind, because my mind was very fresh because I just haven't raced enough. I just did Ironman Copenhagen on 70.3 Dubai in February. So my mind was very fresh and I said, maybe that can be a choker. And yeah, I just wanted to go out and give my very, very best and see what happens. Because, I mean, I was able to run 4 weeks out of Ironman Copenhagen. I didn't have any long run. I was able to run 50 minutes in a row. That was my longest run at all in front of Copenhagen. Then I did German records. So you never know what happened in Ironman. And so I wasn't too concerned. I just said, okay, today is maybe a chance, and if I see a chance, I go for it, and I give my absolutely best, and what the outcome is the outcome, and yeah, I want to be happy and be able to say I give it all on that day, and that was my mindset when I went in the race.
Awesome. I love that, right? And sometimes it's always, you know, just by the sounds of it there, you didn't seem to put a whole lot of pressure on yourself, which I think really helped you there, right? Like if you went into that race that morning having a lot of pressure, you know, putting that goal on your mind that you wanted to make the podium again and that you were, you know, set those barriers up for yourself, I think it maybe might have been a different outcome. But I think you went in with an awesome mindset. And I mean, to see what you came out with is incredible. So like coming out of the water there, knowing Lucy was 8 minutes ahead of the pack, well, you might not have known at the time, but like, how did you feel knowing where you were coming out of the water? And did you care about who was ahead of you at that point? Or what were your thoughts coming out of the water?
I mean, when I was half point on the swim, when we did the turnaround at the boat, I saw that Daniela Ruiz was swimming side by side to me. She was obviously coming from the back, or she was on my feet or whatever. So I thought, oh, that's pretty good, because where she is, normally should be quite much in front. So I was very happy with my position. I thought, okay, just stay here, then you do everything right. And I mean, my goal was to be in the first big pack. And I think, okay, if I swim next to Daniela, I should be at the right place. And when I came out of the water, I saw all the other swimmer girls. And I thought, yeah, I'm pretty much directly in the first pack. And that's exactly where I wanted to be, that Lucy is in the front. I mean, you don't have to be a size to know that. So that was like it should be. And yeah, it was the best position I could have been in.
When you got into the race a little bit and you came to passing Daniela Ruiz, what was your initial thought on that? Were you surprised at first?
I didn't overtook her because she was a bit slower in transition. So I was in front of her on the bike and I was always waiting for her, to be honest, because I thought, okay, now she will hammer past us. And yeah, but she didn't came. And I thought, oh, maybe she's hiding a bit. Maybe she did it like last year, where she took it a bit easy on the first half and then she hammered it on the second half. So when we had the turnaround in Harvey, I saw her and I said, something looks really, really weird. So she didn't really look strong and she was like not in the aero bars. And I thought something must have happened or must have been, yeah, wrong.
Yeah, no, it's true, right? And so I guess I think everyone wants to know, what was that feeling like when you finally passed Lucy to overtake the lead? Like, what was that moment like for you? I'm sure it was quite special and you're probably feeling a million different emotions at that time, right?
Yeah, to be honest, that's true. It's different to overtake someone in an ITU short course race or on Ironman, especially Lucy, because, I mean, she's the honest racer out there because she does everything on her own, and she was out there for 7.5 hours or even more, and then to destroying her dream for a third time in a row, it's like devastating, because I mean, I know her pretty well, she's such a nice person, and yeah, but I mean, it's high performance sport, everyone wants to win, and yeah, so it wasn't an easy pass to do, and yeah, but I mean, I wanted to win also, so I had to do that. And yeah, I tried to stay focused, because I mean, overtaking someone at half point is one thing, but to bring it home in one piece is another one. So yeah, I tried not to think or be emotional or anything. I just like focused on what I have to do. I'm just thinking from aid station to aid station, not doing any mistakes, be concentrated, be in the moment, and and hope for the best, to be honest, because we saw races where people struggling 800 meters out of the finish line. So it's over when you pass the finish line, and until then you really have to concentrate and make everything right and don't make any mistakes.
Right. So, I mean, obviously it sounds like it takes total concentration as you're going through the course. So now what do you think about when you're going through these, like, you know, passing Sarah Crowley, passing Lucy Charles, are you ever worried about pacing too fast, or are you going too slow, or like, or do you just kind of block everything out of your mind and just race off feel, or what's it like in that back half of the marathon?
Yeah, it was a really weird race because I didn't have any thoughts in my head, to be honest. It was like a vacuum in my head, and that's a pretty nice thing, because this conversation, it consumes a lot of energy, to be honest, because one voice says, oh no, you're going too fast, and the other one says, no, you want to win, go faster. And this battle in your head, it's really, really energy consuming. And at this race, I don't know what happened, but it was like there was no one talking in my head. It was just one flow, and I just wanted to go. I just went by feeling. I always imagine, oh yeah, it should roll. It shouldn't hurt. It just go and be happy if it's rolling for another K. And I didn't expect it to go that all the way through, but I always wanted to have the same, like, pain level, I would call it. So I just go by pain level. I have a watch on my hand, but I never watched it. So I always go by feeling, and yeah, it was like a perfect run. I can't say it, because I didn't struggle at all. It was like, yeah, a constant pace. It was lucky. I don't know what to say. Yeah, it was just lucky.
Wow, that's amazing to hear, right? It's always really cool to hear inside, like, what was going through someone's mind in a big important race like that as they're going through it. So that's really cool to hear. And I mean, this is what I'm sure most people are really excited to hear about, right? Like, when was that moment when you realized that you had that locked in the bag and you were becoming the Ironman world champion? Was it as you're running down and hearing them call your name, or like, walk us through that moment?
I mean, I had a pretty good run in 2018 as well, but the last K, I was suddenly really, really struggling, and I thought I would pass out. So I was very concerned about the last K. So the time I really realized, oh, now it could actually happen, was when I was running down the finish chute, took a turn and said, okay, no one is coming. Then the last 200 meters, I felt that I could do it, but you never know, because yeah, it's Ironman, it's a beast, and it's over after the finish line. And when I saw the finish line, I knew, okay, that should work.
Right. No, that's so amazing, right? And yeah, 100%, even with a kilometer go, as we saw with Frankfurt, right? You can just never count on it until you get close, so close to that finish line or cross that finish line. So it's amazing to hear how that all worked out for you. And I'm super glad it did, because it was an incredible race to watch. And I'm sure for you, it'll be a moment that you'll always remember. So that's amazing. And I'm sure you've been asked this question here a million times, but how has this moment changed your life? I can imagine you've been quite busy since October with you know, interviews such as this, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it changed a lot, to be honest. I mean, it hasn't changed me, but my life has changed a bit. And I try not to change it too much, because I'm quite happy with my life. So, I mean, it's an addition, because I got so much offers and options and people I can meet. And it's a really big privilege for me, but I try to still be training my biggest focus, because I want to be good next year as well. So I shouldn't be getting too distracted by everything, but I pick things I really wanted to do. And the rest of the time, I really try to stick what makes me fast and keep on the work I've done before, because that's obviously working. And yeah, stick on the plan that Dan and I pick for next season. Yeah, that's not rocket science. It's just training and resting and do what works.
Love it. Yeah, I love that mentality. That's great. And so let's switch it up and talk about what I find is the latest and greatest news. I mean, a lot of people were excited to hear that both you and Jan Frodeno would be competing at Challenge Roth in 2020. So, like, what made you want to tackle this race this year?
I was born in Bayreuth, and it's very close to Roth, so it's pretty much my home race. And it was the first ever triathlon I saw live. So that was really like kind of inspiring, and that's was the reason why I started triathlon. And last year when I was injured, I had the chance to do the live commentary for the television, and looking behind the scenes and see the passion of the organizers, and yeah, the whole atmosphere there was just amazing. And that was definitely a race I wanted to do, and I'm so happy that it worked out in this year. So yeah, I'm super excited, and yeah, racing in front of a home crowd is always so special. And yeah, it's crazy triathlon town, Rolf. So I'm really, really looking forward to that race.
Awesome. Yeah, no, that's amazing to hear, right? And yeah, so you're local, born and raised in that area, right? So I mean, this is always great because like I myself, traveling from Canada, this will be the first long distance triathlon that I'll be doing. And so going down Challenge Roth, and the team there has been super helpful with, you know, planning as far as, you know, even things like where is best place to stay, you know, best place to visit while you're down there, because we'll be traveling with family. So it's a really cool, like you said, it's a great atmosphere. It's a great group of people who host the event, and they definitely make sure everyone feels included. So I really love that about Challenge Roth. And so you were down there. How did you find the atmosphere when you were there, especially at the finish line? Like, what was that finish line party like?
It's amazing because it's built out of nowhere. So it's, in 1 week they built a big stadium, and it's packed. And yeah, the atmosphere is just amazing. I mean, and not just for the first ones, even for the last finishers. It's always a big party, and everyone is so welcoming, and everyone is getting treated the same, and everyone has so much volunteers and helpers. And yeah, it's a family atmosphere. And even the run course, there are spectators everywhere, and the whole region is triathlon crazy. So I mean, that's the atmosphere I'm really looking forward to, and just soaking it up during a race will be amazing, I think. And yeah, it will be a great race for sure.
Perfect. So like, how have you and Dan went over, you know, a structure of your season to prepare for this race? Like, is it positioned well for you in the season to have a good training build up for it? Or what's your next season sort of looking like around Challenge Roth?
Yeah, I wanted to do Ironman South Africa end of March, because I need my qualification for Ironman Hawaii, and to be best prepared for Challenge Roth. I wanted to get this qualification done as soon as possible, and Ironman South Africa looked like a really good race. So it's a championship race, and it's not too much of a travel. It's no time change. And yeah, that looks perfect for me, and I hope to get in a decent shape for that, but definitely not my focus. I just want to tick the box and get my ticket for Hawaii. But my main focus is definitely Challenge Roth and Ironman Hawaii.
Awesome. That's excellent. And of course, I'm excited to be doing my first Challenge Roth debut the same year you are. Although, I mean, it's safe to say I can assume our results will be quite different there. But for like...
You never know.
You never know. So for like age groupers, much like myself, who'll be racing their first long distance triathlon at Roth this summer, do you have any tips on how to approach the race?
I mean, it's endurance sport. So it means you have to do continuous work. It doesn't matter so much what you do, as long as you train regularly. So that's really the key of endurance sport. Do it regularly on a regular base, and then you're fine for even for a long course. But don't put one week of really, really good training, and then you have 2 weeks of no training, or you're injured, then it won't happen. So every day a bit, and then you're fine for even long course.
Perfect. Nice and simple. I love that. That's awesome advice. So what's one place you recommend people to go visit, see, or experience as a tourist when they travel to Germany for Challenge Roth? You're quite familiar with that area, right?
Definitely to Bayreuth, my home country, my hometown, because that's really amazing. We have the Festspielhaus, and that's really amazing, and the Opernhaus, and Bayreuth is a really, really great city, and I really can recommend that.
Awesome, love it. It's on the to-do list, so that's great. So, I mean, so you have Challenge Roth to look forward to, you have Kona to look forward to, and as you just mentioned there, Ironman South Africa, and also recently, as the way the world rankings work, are looking to look anyway, currently you'll be racing for the Collins Cup for the inaugural year of the PTO, right? So this is all kind of unfolding just recently here. So are you excited about that?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's a great, great new organization. And the first race will be Submarine. So I'm really, really looking forward to that new format. It's cool to race in a team, to be honest. So we have a really, really strong team with Team Europe. So I'm curious to see how it unfolds. And I think it's a really, really great change for triathlon sport. And I'm super, super excited.
Yeah, no, exactly right. I mean, to say Europe has a strong team is an understatement. There's definitely some of the best athletes in the world on that team. But I mean, across the board for USA and international too, all very strong teams. So I'm really excited about this format, and to have it in a team environment is awesome to see. So just, I guess, from your perspective as the athlete, I guess, why is this good for professional triathletes and the sport in general?
Because we stand as a group and as a unit together, and the best athlete will show up and do a great race. It's a new format. Maybe it's more interesting for the people. It's a great, everything is really, really professional, and they want to show triathlon in the best possible way, and the best athletes will compete in that race. So I assume it could be a better platform for triathlon like this. So I'm very excited how it will fall out. So you have to see how it works in Submarine, but everyone is giving their best, and to put the best performance and show we could put on.
Awesome. Yeah. And I love it because I don't know if you're too familiar with it, but I've been following the Super League Triathlon series for the short course for quite a while now. And it's just absolutely amazing. It's really changed it made it audience friendly, right? Spectator friendly for the ITU distance. And it's been absolutely phenomenal to watch that. So when I heard this Collins Cup come out, I thought this is excellent to showcase the long course triathletes. So I definitely think it'll be really exciting. And just to see all the top names, being so optimistic about this organization and about this cup, I think it's really going to be a fascinating time to watch.
Yeah, definitely. I hope it will unfold like the Super League, because that's so customer friendly. I would say it's so exciting, and there's always happening something. And I really, really hope the best that it will work for long course as well. And we are on the best good way, and everyone does their best, and we will see if we can get the same like audience like we get in the Super League.
Excellent. So talking a little bit more about race specific questions here, and I know a lot of listeners for this episode will be in a similar boat as I am, thinking about their first long distance triathlon, or maybe just competing in full Ironman or long distance triathlons, and I would love some training tips, and it's who better to hear it from than one of the Ironman world champions. So I think one of the best things, and I know we briefly talked on this a little bit, but when it comes to finding your race pace, you seem to base it off perceived effort, and you mentioned you wear a watch, but you don't necessarily follow anything like heart rate zones on the run per se, but on the bike, do you tend to use any power zones, or how do you like to pace the bike in a race?
In a race, I always go by feeling. I mean, I do have a power meter, but I just use it in training, and I record it for my coach because Dan is not around, so he needs as much data from me as he can possibly get. So I record every single bike ride I do, but I need the freedom in a race. I don't have any. I have a Garmin on my aerobar, but I don't connect it to my power meter because I don't see the benefit of that, because I mean, if I would cycle and the power meter says I'm going much too hard, I would always worry about, I will like, it's too fast, I will break down in between. Or if I feel good and the power meter shows too less, then I would say, oh God, I have such a shit day, what's wrong? So I need my freedom, and I go by feeling. And I think you will learn over the races. So in the first race, I was definitely too quick. So in the next one, I was a bit slow, and now I'm trying to find my pace and learning by doing. And I always go by feeling. It's the same in the swim, on the run, and on the bike as well.
Amazing. No, that's good. So for big races, I guess, like Kona or Challenge Roth per se, when it comes to planning for one of these big races, do you implement visualization strategies in training to like mentally prepare for the race? Or I know mindset is a huge thing for a lot of triathletes. And how do you get the right mindset for a race that's upcoming?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I try to always like have these pictures in my mind from a perfect race, because I think if the scenario of winning is already in your head, it could be possible. But if it's not even in your head, it can't be possible. So it's definitely a big factor. And in every training session, I try to visualize how it would be in Hawaii, what scenarios could have happened. And I always think if you can dream it, you can do it. And you don't know if it happens, but if it's not in your mind, it can't happen.
Excellent. I love to hear that. And, you know, just something I want to pass on to the listeners as well. This is something I've been doing recently on my run sessions on the treadmill, is I'll simply play for Challenge Roth specifically. I'll play the 2019 race and just watch the swim, because I know the swim for me is the biggest hurdle to overcome in the Challenge Roth race. So just to see it happen at like, you know, minute by minute, and just get myself mentally prepared for that, I think that'll help kind of come race day. Then it's not new territory, right? You've seen it over and over throughout your training. So I think little tips like that go a long way in helping athletes mentally prepare for a race anyway, right?
Definitely. Because you need to know what can happen, because when you're in the race, you shouldn't be surprised of things. And if you already knew the lake or the run course, it's always good. The more information, the better, because then you can make a clear picture in your mind. And if things happen, you're not surprised. And that's a good thing, because then you can stay cool and expect things to happen.
Excellent. I love that. And then, so I guess, what's your ideal buildup on race week look like, I guess, as far as like rest, training, nutrition, all that kind of things? Like, what would you recommend listeners do before a big race and leading up to it the week of?
Preparing for Ironman, it's really about don't do too much. You need to restore your energy. You have to be on the start line with a very, very good energy level. It's different in ITU and 70.3, because then I normally do my tapering. I tried quite hard even just before the race, just to be like sharp and race ready. But I realized on Ironman, it's about having all energy on board you can possibly have. So less is definitely more in Ironman.
Excellent. And then, so for you, example, I guess leading up to Challenge Roth, like, are you one to kind of go drive the bike course, or, you know, drive the run course and just kind of get familiar with the course? Or like, how do you as an athlete or pro athlete strategize for a race? Do you look it up ahead of time and look up the elevation distances or what's your thoughts around that?
I will definitely go with a car. I will go on the bike course. I'm not sure if I will cycle it. Maybe the key points, like the Solara Hill, just to get a feeling how steep it is and which kind of cassette you choose for your race wheel. And the run course, I know pretty good, because, I mean, it's pretty straight on the Rhein-Main-Donau Canal, so it's not really exciting. But the key points, I will definitely have a look at. But I don't get too nervous about that. It's a bike course and it's a run course. And on race day, everything is different anyway. So I will definitely have a look, but I don't get too crazy about that.
Perfect. No, good to know. And then looking at, I guess, at your on-course nutrition for a long-distance triathlon, I know every athlete's different, but generally, do you have some rules that you follow, or what's your strategy when it comes to on-course fueling? I know, I guess it depends on the weather, the course, all things like that. But generally, do you have any rules you follow?
The rule I follow is if I'm hungry, I eat. To be honest, I do anything by feeling. I hate it to be like every 10K I have to eat such amount of carbohydrates. No, I don't do that. I mean, if I feel like I need energy, I will take on some energy. And if I don't feel like eating, I don't eat. So that's my strategy. I don't know if it works for everyone. I can't recommend it to everyone, but I have a special like fluid nutrition thing. So it goes in my system quite quickly. And when I feel like I need some energy, then I go for it. And the rest, I drink water. To be honest, it's as simple as that.
Yeah, honestly, that's really cool. You know, I'm loving to hear this feedback from you on, you know, your approach to races, right? Like you keep it nice and simple and you get the job done. I absolutely love that. That's really cool. What do you use, I guess? Like, do you just create your own drink or do you use a certain brand or what's your go-to for the fueling?
I'm with NFT, that's called Nutritional Fine Tuning, from Caroline Rauscher. She's a German nutritionist. And the thing is like, it's very high concentrated. I always have it in my aero bottle in my frame. And on the run, I have it in a little bottle close to my race suit. And yeah, every time I feel like I would need to eat, then I squeeze a bit of that and drink water after that, and that's it. And if it's really, really hot, like in Hawaii, I have some salt with me, but that's it. I like to have it really, really simple because, I mean, yeah, as simple as possible. That's my thing. And I have good experience with that.
So one of the last questions I'd like to ask is, I guess this is a pretty simple one, but who would you say was your biggest influence in triathlon, whether it's someone who's currently racing triathlon or someone in the past, or just someone who's made a big impact in your career?
It was definitely Emma Snowsell and now Emma Frodeno, because I really, really liked her running style. She was like a tiny athlete like me, and she was flying over the run course, and I always admire her. And yeah, she was like a big role model to me, and she inspired me. And she was a Olympic champion as well. And I mean, yeah, her running style really, really inspired me. And I always try to like pick what makes her so special. But yeah, I mean, she's an amazing athlete.
Amazing. Awesome. Yeah, she's incredible. So that's awesome to hear that she's one who influenced you. So really cool. And you know what, that's pretty much all the questions I had. Now, I just want to ask a couple quick questions from some of the listeners here. So I put out a message yesterday seeing if anyone else wanted to ask a couple questions, and we got a huge response. So we won't go through all of them, but I'll pick a couple out that I thought were quite interesting that we can see if you can answer. So someone asked in the audience that, how did it feel in your training and competing in your first ever triathlon? And if you could go back and tell yourself anything, what would it be?
I mean, what I really, really struggled with was running off the bike. I mean, I haven't done it in training before ever, because I thought that can't be rocket science, but it is rocket science, to be honest. And I would definitely recommend to train that before, because that's really horrible if you haven't run off a bike.
Excellent. Nice. Love that. And then one of the last ones I'll ask here is, any tips you have to beat mental fatigue?
Yeah, that's a good thing, huh? Yeah. I mean, if you have a worse race, then the mental fatigue gets really worse and you have to find strategies. So I always break it down as in really, really tiny bits. I mean, on the run, that's good to think just from aid station to aid station, because that's about 2Ks apart from each other, and you can keep your concentration up until this point. And I mean, if the fatigue really kicks in, make it as the distance as small as possible. Or a good thing is to like sing a song and get the rhythm and just try to distract your mind with anything possible, just to get rid of the pain feeling. So sing a song, think what you're doing on the next nutrition station. Maybe use your arms a bit more, and on the next K you say, okay, now I am pushed a little bit more of my feet on the next K. Yeah, just try to keep your mind busy.
Yeah, I love that, right? You know, just occupy your mind and set those small little micro goals, you know, 500 meters at a time or 1 kilometer at a time and distract yourself. I really love that. That's some great advice there. So honestly, I mean, there's a bunch of questions here, but I think we got a ton of information from you here and we're super happy to have you on. So thanks so much for all that, Anne. For, I guess, the listeners who don't already follow you throughout social media or your website, where's the best place they can follow you through 2020?
Definitely via Facebook and Instagram. So, that's always a good thing. And it's very updated. So if anyone wants to follow, go on Instagram and you are updated.
Perfect. Awesome. That's amazing. And of course, we're really looking forward to watching how 2020 season pans out for you. Now, aside from Collins Cup, aside from the South African Championships, Kona and Challenge Roth, do you have any other races planned out, or is that just sort of wait and see how the season feels and how other races fit into the schedule?
Yeah, definitely. Because I learned from last year that you shouldn't pick too much races before because you never know what happens. So just focus on this very little one, the big ones, but very few ones, because I want to do them right. And if there's time to squeeze some races in, I would do it very spontaneously. But that are my four races and then see what happens in between.
Perfect. Excellent. Well, we're all really looking forward to it. And, you know, we hope you had nothing but the best. I hope the season's as successful as it was in 2019. And you know what? That's a wrap. And hopefully we'll see you down at Challenge Roth. And other than that, thanks so much and all the best.
Yeah, thank you very much. And all the best for you for Challenge Roth.
Perfect. Thanks. Cheers. Awesome. Well, that's a wrap with 2019 Ironman World Champion Anne Hogg. And thanks so much for listening in. Now, if you enjoy this episode, among others, then please just take a minute to open up your Apple Podcast app on your iPhone, search Pacing Racing, and be sure to subscribe, and then scroll down to the bottom and just leave us a quick written review. That takes less than a minute to do, and it goes a long, long way in helping me out. So to all who do that, thanks so much. It's greatly appreciated. And other than that, thanks so much, guys, and happy training. And if you want to train with me on Zwift, then feel free to drop me a follow by searching Steven Langenhausen. Other than that, take care, chat soon, cheers.